sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Markets up for February, but the Ukraine may spoil the party. Friday's afternoon plunge may be an ominous sign. Cold weather continues and the global eco outlook is softening. All this and much more on episode number 353 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hello and welcome. This is Andrew Horowitz. I hope all is well with you. Yes, for all of you that had been asking, Frankie Curzio and I did have some great dinner down on South Beach last week. We went to a restaurant. First of all, we got there at about 6:30, 7 o'clock, and it was pretty much empty. They just opened, we found out. And what we didn't know was that the menu would be so delicious. I must tell you that we had some great steak between the filet and the porterhouse, and we had some great potatoes. But one of the things that was on the menu, and I don't think that much really takes Frankie or myself back, but they had some Kobe beef on the menu. They had both a Kobe beef that was a filet, and they also had Kobe beef that was a sampler platter. I guess you get different parts of the Kobe. Now, the Kobe on the filet was $290, and the sampler was a bunch more. It was about $450. No, we didn't order that, but we did have a great time and talk about a lot of things of interest, a lot of things about the markets. I'm waiting to hear back from him. He was there for a conference with Porter Stansberry in the group, and he had a debate with Porter on the markets, and I believe he was taking the bullish side and Porter was taking the bearish side. I'm kind of looking forward to talking to him and finding out more about that. In the meantime, I did have a great weekend. Otherwise, I flew out, went to New York over the weekend for an absolutely wonderful party for some friends, a bat mitzvah of one of my friend's kids, Sarah. And we had just a tremendous time celebrating with them. I must say that the weather, though, was not as great. It was somewhere between 19 and, I guess, about 40 degrees. But what was nice was, you know, have you ever done this? You go to where you grew up, the old stomping ground, to spend some time and bring back all those memories. Well, I did that. And I also had the opportunity to bring my son and my wife and some friends over to the house that I grew up in out in Commack, Long Island. And you know, I think it shrunk. One of the funny things is, I went to the side of the house where my dad had stored the boat. We had one of our boats there for the winter. You know, in the winter in New York, you winterize the boat and you close it all up, get it ready so that, you know, it doesn't get too much snow and any kind of the cold in there. And you winterize the engine, get it all buttoned up. And then, you know, when it becomes summer again, well, you get it going. That's for the smaller boats. The bigger boats, you have what was called a bubble-up system, where we would have the bubbles inside of the underneath the water so that it wouldn't freeze. But anyway, so we had a boat there, and I remember the boat being there. It was a pretty big area and all that. And I got there, and I'm thinking, I said to my son, Brett, I said, Brett, I have no idea how we stored a boat here. I mean, I have no idea what is the direction that we put this boat in, because I do not see any way that a boat of any size can fit in this area. And I was just stumped. I started looking around. I'm like, you know, and gosh, that backyard is a lot smaller than I remember, even though there's a pool there. And anyways, obviously, the way we look at things from history and the way we look at things ahead. And it occurred to me at that moment that, you know, this is the reason why our markets have such a great ability to heal, have this wonderful opportunity to look at things from the past and really say, you know what, there is times that we could just look at the horrible things that happened in, you know, wherever the date was and this, you know, terrible circumstance in terms of losing money, et cetera, and then just kind of pop back because we forget about it. That's why the 2008 minutes of the Fed were released 5 years later. We don't want to know about it then, because we knew about the banks that were failing and the problems they were having at the level that the Fed was discussing them could be a problem. But you know what? We look back 5 years ago and we're like, oh, you know, it's a lot smaller than we thought it was. Or maybe it was a lot greater, but it doesn't really bother us right now. Well, right now we have a situation that's going on in the Ukraine, in Russia, in Crimea, and this whole region that is erupting. On top of that, we have Venezuela, which even though Carnival is going on, they're still having a tremendous amount of protests. And there's these hot spots, these flare-ups that have been happening over the last several years around the world that have temporary implications to markets. They create a sense of concern. They create a sense of worry. And then they seem to pass. At least that is what has been happening. Now, I'll tell you historically that oftentimes in the good times, it's those very simple, very much unknown until they occur moments that do end up putting a strange tailspin into markets that end up oftentimes being much bigger. Look at what happened with the Mideast and the Arab Spring that went on, and look at what's going on now with the Ukraine. The Arab Spring clearly started out as one country and then spread. The big issue right now is the question I think that we all have is, what in the world does the Ukraine and the situation there really have to do with our markets here? The Ukraine is a small economic country in terms of exports, imports, really doesn't have a lot to do with us. But yet, on Friday of last week, we saw that the futures and the markets came in pretty significantly when there was some tensions building after, as I've mentioned, we'll talk about this in a minute, after the press reported some BS about a peace treaty and tried to essentially just roll over the entire story that was going on there with a makeup job and trying to make it look much better than it was. And we'll talk about this whole press thing and my whole concept and comment and discussed, frankly, with the current day's media and what the real problem is there. But we saw that there was almost a 30-point move on the NASDAQ, about a 15-point approximate move from 2 p.m. in the afternoon on Friday through the end of the day. And then it popped back a bit when there was the end of the month covering going on and all the other things. But we see the futures open up on Sunday night pretty down pretty sharply on this. So what's going on? Well, part of the problem is that it's a political one. That's the first thing. What happened was that the U.S. and other countries around the world asked and pleaded and begged Vladimir Putin from Russia to, you know, kind of hold off. Let's do some negotiation. Let's try the peaceful route, which, you know, seems to work if you just let things play out for a while and then, of course, shove a lot of money into the situation to shut everybody up. And that didn't work. Putin went in and sent in the troops and authorized military action in order to contain the circumstance. And you remember something, there's a lot of history that goes on here that goes back to the 50s when the Ukraine was much more part of course, the USSR. And there is a concern that there are some ports and some very important areas in and around Crimea and the Ukraine that could be exposed and cause some problems for Russia. Now, not only problems on an economic standpoint, but also on a military standpoint. That's really what's going on here. In a way, you can't really blame Russia for trying to contain the problem in a very, very quick manner so that it doesn't get out of hand, because this is some of the region there is of military and of security importance to the country because of the access points and the access areas for Russia and for the region itself. There's also a small amount of, or really not insignificant, but a smaller amount of economic issue when it comes to some pipelines of natural gas and oil, et cetera. You see that oil is popping in the pre-hours of not only on Friday afternoon, but also on Sunday evening. And it's starting to move up almost 2% on crude. And the concern is that there could be some disruption to the delivery, production, of crude because of some of these military actions, depending on how much, you know, of course, this spreads and where this is going to end up. But right now, the bigger issue is the political implications by Vladimir Putin making such a bold move here, and it's against the best wishes of the United States. And now we have Kerry Secretary of State going to do something there. And Obama, of course, had about a 90-minute conversation initially that didn't obviously hold any kind of sway when it came to this. So the big issue right now is, I don't think, an economic one that can really do some significant damage directly, where, just as a point, if something happened in Panama where that was closed down, or maybe there was some other major issue around the world where there was a big port or some other massive issue, like, for example, the storms that are causing some disruption in the U.S. But yet, at the same time, I think really what the bigger concern is that this does ignite the recollection of the Cold War and the fact that this is now becoming a greater potential for adversarial relationship with the U.S. and and Russia. And, of course, it also is, there's a lot of words that are coming out of the Ukraine, you know, as an act of war and an invasion, and nobody asked for it. But, you know, we'll have to see how this plays out. It's going to be very interesting. One of the things that you may end up seeing here is that there is a who cares attitude, where if you do see that futures and markets come in a bit on this news, that very quickly they'll respond positively, because there is still a lot of money sloshing around in the system due to central banks funding as much as they can into punching liquidity into the system. And as such, there'll be those players that say, you know what, this will eventually abate, at least in their processing of the data. And what they'll do is they'll just buy in at any cost and at any price. You know, you saw that at Friday. What happened on Friday was it came down pretty hard and kind of popped back a few points as people felt that, hey, you know what, this is not going to last forever. Similar to what I had talked about with the weather. You know, it's not going to stay cold forever. And therefore, natural gas prices, you know, really were unable to be sustained at the levels they were being pushed at, because all these people were buying into the idea that, hey, look at all the problems are going to have disruption with natural gas because of the cold weather, the increased amount of demand, lower supply, and you can take it from there on that whole relationship. And then, you know, this kind of pumped up the price dramatically. And what happened? Last week we saw two of the worst days ever for natural gas. Hopefully you profit on that. We did talk about shorting natural gas on a couple different times here, and also on the DH Unplugged show was one of the stock picks I actually had for the week, was to short that area. But now you'll probably see gold continue to move higher, which was very interesting that we did see over the last several weeks, with all the good things that are happening in the markets, and all the fact that, even with the fact that you saw that there was new records made on the S&P 500, you saw that gold continued to move higher, silver continued to move higher. You saw that gasoline and oil continued to move higher, which was really kind of strange. If you think about it, why in the world would we be seeing that oil should be moving higher, whether put on the side of that, when there really wasn't a lot happening in terms of global growth? We saw that GDP slowed down and was under the level we expected for the U.S. We saw that China's numbers consistently over the last couple of months have been slowing, and the latest report over the weekend also showed that there was a continuation of the slowdown in the manufacturing in China. And really, there was nothing to really say other than possibly some seasonality, the cold weather. But maybe behind all of this was this disruption in the area of the Ukraine and some of the region that was really causing some of this concern. And there was people behind the scenes getting more in place with their investments. We talked about the VIX a couple of times. It's been a pretty lousy investment. We actually had implemented a position on the VIX last week or so, maybe 2 weeks ago, and added to it on a VIX ETF that has been moving. And it was interesting, actually, that on Friday, even with the markets hitting a high, you did see the VIX move up. I thought that was a very interesting tell of what was going on. And the short-term VIX instruments actually moved higher as well. So with the global economic situation really kind of slowing, and this new monkey wrench thrown into the action right now, I mean, I think we really do have some cause for concern. Yes, February was a good month, and it was a good month based on the fact of, well, essentially we saw that the U.S. earnings situation looked a little bit better for the most part, but on softening economics, and really it was all about, I think, the fact that the hope for Janet Yellen to come in and to do what she can, and really, in a way, I think it was really overplayed, frankly, to come up with some more stimulus. You know, that was really the big play that was playing out in the month of February. So I want to talk about a few other things and talk about the week that had passed and talk about some of the things that I noticed. I wrote down some notes throughout the week, and I wanted to kind of have some of that as a conversation because interesting things happened. And I really want to focus in on the media and the way that media is presenting things these days. And I've talked about this before, about how the media seems to frame things in a way that they are doing so to attract readers by their headlines. And the headlines are oftentimes saying one thing, and when you look at the guts of the story and really the details behind what the headline is, oftentimes you find that there's something much different than was you had what you had first thought it was by just simply just reading what was the headline. Now, I think the case in point can be made here from two different ways. I think, first of all, when we look at what's going on in the Ukraine, there's been a lot of rioting, uprising, and throwing over the government, and for good reason. You know, the country is poverty-stricken, while the finance ministers and the president and all of the people in government really live high on the hog. They went and did a review of the presidential palace, and boy, was that just amazing. Ornate statues and marble inlays and just amazing amounts of wealth with the faucets in the bathroom that were gold-leafed. We talked about this on the DH Unplugged show this week. And the uprising obviously has some very good reason to do so. Now, one of the things you saw last week, or actually the week before, was a few days of rioting and of protesting, and the president and the heads of the government stepped back and kind of disappeared in a way. And all of a sudden, you saw that Europe and the U.S. and everybody's, oh, we're going to help you. We're going to do what we can to get you some money. There was a first media item that came out, $1 billion or so from the U.S. Well, that was later retracted as just, you know, that could be up to this, and it would meet certain conditions first before actually it was going to be done. And there was a possibility. So in other words, they hedged out of that towards the middle of the week. And then you saw that Europe was going to be possibly participating. And then there was a whole issue and problems with Russia because of the different segments of the population of Ukraine and who wants to be and doesn't want to be involved with Russia. But I thought the most interesting thing was that we saw that there was a call for a ceasefire. The news media had talked all about this. And then next thing you know, hey, wait a minute, things are flaring up again and all sorts of problems. I got to tell you something. Here's the problem. Number one, the news media these days seem very young. And I don't mean young in terms of just age. I'm talking about a maturity and of time in the field and of understanding the total, not only political nature of how things go, but also the financial markets and the amount of spin that is put on, because what they're looking to do, and this is a big issue, is that they're trying their best to be the first to the market, first to the reader's eye, because that's what's going to attract the most readership and therefore turn into potentially a much higher level of hits on the websites, etc. That is what they're looking for. They want the eyeballs first. And as such, they're not doing as much of a complete job in the analysis of their news items. And they're not doing clearly enough to find out the bottom line and all the different components. Oftentimes, we've said in the past that when it came to the media, the historical way that things were done was that you'd find a couple of different opposing viewpoints, present those, and report. Now what we're getting is much more of an opinion-based news item, whether it's the political side or, more importantly, and the thing that's really disturbing, is related to the financial markets. Because what you see is not always what you get. And I just want to kind of keep you aware of that. That doesn't mean that there is a problem in terms of them just being too positive or throwing too much of a spin or too negative. I want to just let you know that when you're reading things and when you're watching the headlines, do yourself a favor. Go and find not only the details of what is being written about, but more importantly, go to a secondary source. Go to a source and find what they're saying in the other source and make sure that there is a commonality of the findings. Now, I know that means a lot more work, and I know that means that you have to go to more places than one, and if it's not just right on the homepage of some particular site that you like, well, then it's not going to work for you, and it's going to be difficult. But I really do think it's going to be very beneficial for your overall investment experience and actually for your sanity, which sometimes can get tested when you do see that, you know, what this news item, wait a minute, we saw that this is a really good. For example, last week we saw that new home sales were 20% greater than the anticipated amount. And this happened on Wednesday. Immediately, the stock market ran up on the news from where it was. And by the end of the day, it just came down. And as a matter of fact, it turned about 15 or 16 points on the S&P 500. The NASDAQ was really sliding very, very quickly towards the afternoon and basically recovered by the end of the day, most of it. But in the end, the fact of the matter was that why all of a sudden do we get a piece of good news and things turn around? Well, was it because that the dollar was moving in relation to that? Not really. Because if you really focus on the housing number, you realize that during the time that was the news item, hey, things were fine. It was the continuation of what's going on in Europe and the problems there and the rise in the dollar that was related to the housing that also caused a lot of weakness in many of the emerging markets' currencies that had investors spooked. So there isn't always a full day rationale for what goes on, but realize that right now we are in a negative news cycle that is actually good for the markets. We saw that Janet Yellen came out on Thursday and talked about the markets, answered a lot of questions by the Senate, and this was the discussion that was supposed to be had in the congressional testimony that she was supposed to give when she was snowed out a couple of weeks back. So she came back and gave testimony and answered a variety of questions. One of the things that was really interesting was she was asked, when and where do you think you'll start, you know, changing things? And when are we going to be in a normal economy? And I thought that it was interesting that she said that we're nowhere even near being in a normalized or normal, healthy economy. And also talked about how the 6.5% is not an actual number that they are looking at right now for the unemployment rate, and that's not their target and their full employment. And the fact that it's going to be many, many years until the Fed is less accommodative than they are now. And I think finally, this was really cool. She admitted that there is no bonds that will be sold from what they bought, or at least is not going to be a significant amount sold. They're just going to let it run off naturally. In other words, they're going to hold the bonds to maturity and let it just run off. So we have years and years that the balance sheet of the Fed is going to be at the levels they are currently, and it's only going to be by a natural attrition when the bonds come due that they're going to move off the balance sheet. Now, what's fascinating about this is that it's really a wonder that when we see that there is a good level of overall manufacturing, nothing terrible, nothing great, but okay level, and of the service index and of sales of retail, and the unemployment rate comes down to a reasonable level according to their statistics, and not a lot of inflation that you have to worry about, that they still think this is a really screwed up economic condition that requires them to have such a heavy hand in the overall stimulus process. Now, maybe they're projecting something. Maybe they're protecting from the emerging market issue. Maybe what they're doing is just putting some padding in there. But you remember something. At the end of the day, the job of the Fed is very simple. It is to promote growth. They will not say things that do not promote growth, even if it may be true. I talked about this a little bit on Frank Curzio's great podcast. If you haven't listened, I was on his show, the guest this week, on his podcast, or last week on his podcast. You can go over to The Disciplined Investor and you can check that out. We have a link and you can actually play the audio right there. A couple of things I want to talk to you about. I want to talk to you about some stocks. Talk to you about what's going on with markets. And we talked about how the fear and greed is out there. And on the Tuesday, I'm kind of giving you a couple of things here. Let me rattle these off to you, okay? Every other Tuesday over at TradeStation, 11 o'clock in the morning, I do a live commentary on stocks and ETFs. If you want to register, you can go over to, just type in, TradeStation live webinar, if you want to Google that, or you can just go to TradeStation, or you can check it out on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. You can just go register, and it's free, and you can just get reminders. Every other Tuesday, so not the coming Tuesday, but the one after that, At 11 o'clock in the morning, I do this live half-hour discussion. And we've had some very lively discussions lately. And one of the things we talked about is this whole idea of fear and greed. This is really what markets run on. Think about it. The emotional process of markets. Now, it doesn't have to be really just fear, you know, like panic and fear. But it's the idea of fear of losing money, fear of not being in there to make money, right? Or the greed of taking profits, or the greed of making more money, really drives the whole cycle of the market. Now, for example, we see that markets last week had several days that there was concerning news on a variety of different fronts, and there was some selling off that went on and some movement down, whether it was on a stock or whether it was on the markets themselves. For example, you saw that Target came out with their numbers. They missed and they were worse than, and they also guided a bit lower. Now, meanwhile, pre-market, that came out, and there was some good volume on this, but what happened? Well, the stock was off by about 2.5%. Nothing major, but the stock has been trending lower for a while since they had that data breach that happened not too long ago. And there's a big concern about how much are they going to have to pay? You know, $1 billion, $1.5 billion, and how many customers are they going to lose? What's going to happen to their customer base that doesn't look to them and, you know, find them to be a reputable place because they don't want to use their credit cards and they're not going to use the Target card? And there's just all sorts of bad news surrounding the store right now. Now, that's a recipe, if you think about it, for a nice uptick, because what happens is that everybody is sitting on one side of the equation, and oftentimes you see this when there's so many people on one side of the equation. The next process, the next thing that happens is very simple, that when you see anything to the contrary of what the consensus is thinking, there's oftentimes a big move. So what happened was the markets open, and how do you know it? By the end of the day, Target was up 7%. 7%. On a miss. Pretty incredible. Why? Well, it wasn't as bad as was expected, and the news wasn't really that terrible, and they didn't really drop every single client and customer out there, and the cost of the potential for them to make good on the breach and all that wasn't as bad as they could be. Now, there may be some take back on that number, but pretty incredible when you look at the fact that they did not do well and they guided lower. We also saw that Tesla had a couple of really interesting announcements last week. You know, they announced this Gigafactory that they have, and they also announced the issuance of convertibles. They also had a really interesting announcement where they came out. This was really cool, actually. They came out and talked about the risk to their convertibles that are currently outstanding, because what happened is that the convertibles that they have right now is that are currently out there are actually at a point where if they did get called and get converted, there'd possibly be some loss to the company on this. And they came out and talked about that. You usually don't hear about that from a company. Again, Elon Musk coming out with some goodwill to his investors and maybe looking at it to protect his investors, or possibly looking at it to in a way that is going to, you know, simply be upfront and open. But either way, it's really kind of a goodwill gesture. Now, they also came out with some more bonds that they're issuing because they're building this Gigafactory. The stock has been on an absolute, more than a tear, it's been on a single trajectory since it released its earnings last week, and it's been a very impressive run. But, you know, you look at some of the names that are really playing out now. What do you have? You have Tesla, you have some of the internet-based, you have like a Google, and you have Facebook and Twitter. Twitter actually was short on that position. We entered a short late last week. We think that Twitter is no Facebook. Twitter has much less of a chance, much less opportunity from an overall standpoint of making the kind of money that Facebook does because of the impact on people's lives. Really, at the end of the day, if you want to find out stuff and you want to send out information and you want to possibly connect, okay, Twitter is a great vehicle to do a mass amount of information, either gathering or providing. On the other hand, Facebook has a lot more to offer because you have a lot more room to put things. The storage and the centralization of the information, the intertwining of not only business but also family matters. This is a whole a dramatic difference between the two. And if you look at the valuations of Facebook versus Twitter and how Twitter has run up even after they disappointed a bit and the potential for how they are going to capitalize, boy, there's just there's no challenge, in my opinion, between the two. So not that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to see a major amount of movement of Facebook up. It may, you know, it's good. But Twitter, I just don't see the value in the shares at this point. Now, we won't get crazy and hold this forever if it runs away for whatever reason, because we see these animal spirits and the greed factor of the markets becoming so overheated that they just can't do without this stock for some reason. Because you look at the daily runs, these things have been just, you know, kind of working in tandem and going up almost every single day and making a lot of investors, well, we'll call it cocky. And if I'm going to find one of the stocks that there has been a drag along value with, I'm going to look for the one with the valuation problem comparatively. Now, there may not be one in the group that you're looking at, but when you do find one and you see that there's possibly one of them is rising due to the others and the fact that there is a really case can be made for them having inflated values to a level that is, you know, kind of ridiculous, well, then that's what you want to look for. So Twitter is one of those that I would keep an eye on in terms of the short side of things. And, you know, you're going to be going through a variety of process of, you know, where they are going to be running up and down. And you're going to find those investors that when they do move it down, they're going to want to pick it up and kind of finally get in. But it is the nature of the beast. Now, one of the things I also want to talk about is hopefully, since we're talking about in this area, genre of trading and positioning. Last week, we talked about natural gas, talked about how natural gas was really to a point that was ridiculous. We knew for a fact a few things. And if nothing else, we knew that summer was coming, right? We knew that we were going to see a warming spell sometime in the future and that even though we may see a continuation and a very long period of cold weather, eventually, summer will come. And as this occurred, we saw that there was a slight uptick in the natural gas in the, not last week, but the week before, at the end of the week, into the beginning of the week, where there was a little storm coming in, and there was also some other discussion about how there was the you know, potential for another major cold front to happen. And all of a sudden, they talked about a little bit of warming up. Do you see what happened to natural gas? I mean, you saw that there was two different months they talked about. There was one that was in the sixes, that was the March, and then you had the next contracts. And basically, you saw about a 15% move down in about 4 days, natural gas. We covered our position in that short, made about 20-ish percent, a little over 20% on that position in about 4 or 5 days, utilizing an ETF. But this was one of those times that you have to say, you know what, I see how this is moving up. I understand the parameters of this. We don't see that inventories are actually at a level that are being depleted. And it just makes a lot of sense. Now, of course, if you got into it at the wrong time, in other words, you were early and you were short early, you didn't make any money. So timing was really key here. Now, we just hit it just right. And that's not, you know, you usually don't get it that close and you're not that good at really nailing it like that. Very, very difficult. There's no particular way to find that sweet spot that's really that, hey, you know, it's moving. But one of the things you could look at is when you see that parabolic move, that last gasp on the upside, where it's kind of like, think about a think about a plane kind of going up in the sky and increasing their altitude. And then what they do is they change and continually change the pitch higher and higher and higher and higher till almost they're straight up and down. And once they get to that point, if they run out of gas, all of a sudden you see that vertical move start reversing very dramatically. And if you think about when you see that parabolic move where it becomes a vertical move in a very short period of time, straight up, that is oftentimes a blow-off top indication for a stock or a commodity or an index, whatever it may be. And that's when you want to pounce. Now, it depends on a few things, of course, about the momentum behind it, about maybe what the future holds, et cetera. But you have to be, you know, use your judgment. And the same thing occurs, particularly more relevant, possibly, on the downside. When you see that there is a significant amount of downward action, and then you see that final move down on a stock, think of a chart. And think of how, you know, you start moving down, stock is moving down and lower, days are going by, and all of a sudden you get this big move down on a lot of volume. Interestingly, a lot of people would think that is going to be the time when you want to start getting into the short side of things. Well, the fact is that's usually the exhaustion point. That's the time when you want to go the opposite direction, at least for a trade, because you've gotten rid of all the sellers that were really out there, that were really finally capitulating, saying, I'm out of this thing, and they do it on a big volume day, always looking for a very, very big volume day, and that's when you want to say, okay, I'll take the other side of that for a quick trade. Now, if it fails below the level that it was prior that you moved in at, well, of course, you can simply get out of it and look at that as the, you know, it didn't work exactly, but then look for it again. You know, if at first you don't succeed, right? So look for those kind of blow-off tops, blow-off bottoms, where there's a lot of volume, there's a high pitch, and you see that that parabolic move looks like it could be coming to a quick end. Now, in terms of markets, where are we? Well, markets are seemingly being very, very happy about holding high valuations on the S&P 500, on the NASDAQ, but there are a lot of indications that things are getting pretty pricey. Now, this can go on for a while. It all depends on the amount of thought that goes into what the future will hold. Well, already we know that Janet Yellen isn't, you know, budging. It doesn't matter really, seemingly, what the Fed. I think what we learned is it doesn't matter what the Fed says; they're just doing what they want anyway. And whether it's because of a particular thing they're seeing, or it's just because they don't know how the hell to get out of it, whatever the reason is, they're going to do what they do. And when we look at the valuation of some individual stocks, you have to realize, well, you know, there's some things that are getting a little bit frothy here. Now, we're still probably due for that correction that we never had. I think we had, what, a 5% correction last in January? That was the biggest. Oh, my gosh. That was like, oh, the sky's falling. You know, 5% correction that was pretty much turned around about 3 weeks after that. So really, I consider that a bit of a wash. I consider that a final try, a second hope rally. And with the fact that there is going to be a continuation of tapering, you're going to see a lot of volatility. You're going to see a lot of stocks that will do well due to M&A activity in certain areas like biotech and possibly technology. But, you know, realize that the animal spirits are really out there and they're moving things beyond a reasonable level that when they do in fact turn, just be aware. So if you're in a stock that you like that's done really well, that you've had a good feeling for because the fundamentals are solid and technicals look good too, don't get caught up in the idea that this will go on forever. I can tell you, I have friends that, oh man, my stocks are going up. You know, he talks about a couple of different positions that he has. Oh, it's going up every, is it right? It's going up every day. Is it normal? It's going up every day. You know, and walking around kind of, you know, like, hey, this is what's going to be. And then there's others that you see that they have a stock and they fall in love with it. And we've seen this before. Remember, this time is different is not in your vocabulary. Because this time is not different. So we're going to see that volatility will return, whether it's right now or in 2 months or in 6 months. Volatility will return. The VIX will go back to normalized levels where it is maybe in the 15 to 17, 18 range or so on average, not in this 12 and 11 range and 13s, okay? VIX is, you know, going to be one of those things that you have to watch for and watch it for, you know, when there's a signal. But basically, it's hanging around below 15 right now. And then also what I would like to do is, you know, say that, you know, you'll see that the first round of the emerging markets move on the lower side and then their reversal in the February month is probably going to be halfway at least reversed again moving into March and April. March and April being particularly oftentimes rough months for markets. October is another month, but April also. April is probably one of the worst months, I think, in history we've seen if you look at the consistency of the problems. But, you know, that doesn't mean it's going to happen this time. But again, it's also, we go back to the phrase that, you know, this time is different and it's not. JCPenney, I want to mention also, and finally about this stock roundup here. JCPenney came out with earnings that weren't as dismal as some people thought. But more importantly, they announced that there was no further follow-up on the SEC investigation, and that actually vaulted the stock about 25% the day they came out with their earnings. That's pretty impressive. That's pretty substantial. So when we look at the markets right now, I want you to look at some of those very much oversold positions that look like they are on death's door. Like we saw, for example, gold in the beginning of the year. We saw some of the coal names also at the end of last year. It looked like, oh, that's it. They're done. Kaput. Bye. I want you to look at those as the next opportunity to possibly put some money into and look to identify some of those. Wait for that point of the blow-off bottom, you know, the sell-off exhaustion point on big volume, and then look for the turn. And once you find that turn and starts moving and you see a little bit of momentum building there, that's usually a time to pick up that position. All right, what else is going on? We did have a few more alerts that came through. It's been interesting because there's been a lot of very extended moves to the upside or the downside on earnings, and we've seen that there's been a lot of excitement in companies like, you know, the names that you know, and we saw the Teslas and the Facebooks and the Twitters, etc. I had mentioned that I was really concerned about Twitter. I thought that the valuations were really outside the boundaries of any kind of reality here. And I said that, you know, of course, that Twitter, the differential between Twitter and a Facebook is just monstrous. I mentioned that many times just before last show and also on DH Unplugged and in some writings, et cetera. I mean, really, I've talked about it ad nauseum here, so I apologize. But that's something that I would really take a look at and, you know, find out if that's something that is going to, you know, hold up long term in terms of their overall valuation. The other things that I want to mention to you is that, you know, it is the start of the month, and oftentimes you do see that there is a change of complexion in the market in the beginning of the month, towards the end, and then in the beginning. Oftentimes you will see that there's excess money that is brought into the market a lot of times because you do see that 401k plans and various other programs that have automatic amounts of money that are coming into the market on a regular basis will in fact continue to do so, and that just will pour the money into the beginning part of the month. And it's not as much as we used to see it. In the old days, you know, they would collect money maybe every other week from an employee, put it into an account, hold it for a little while, and move it over. These days, things are much different. These days, it could be that large companies have an electronic transfer on a daily basis that moves money into the market almost instantaneously. So the kind of moves that you would expect to see because of large 401k deposits in the various months throughout the year probably are not the same as they would be. The only difference is that, of course, that if a company has payroll that is on a certain day, that's when the money is usually taken out of a paycheck, and that's the day that it was put into the funds that are chosen for the 401k. And this is a big issue, of course, for maybe the certain times of the week. It could be Mondays, it could be Fridays. So think about that as a consideration when you're investing, that there are oftentimes a lot of things outside the parameters of whether or not markets, economics, stocks, or bonds have any particular relationship to what's going on underlying the surface. It's just simply the fact that there's money going in or possibly even going out because of automatic processes such as pension plans. So just put that into your mix when you're thinking about things, that when those times are, the things don't make much sense maybe, and you realize that, wait a minute, could be that this is simply a lot of money into markets due to the fact that either a rotation is going on, or possibly a 401k deposit's going on, or maybe an end of year pension deposit. It could be a lot of things that are going on. So that's something that really needs to be considered as well. I think it was also interesting that we are seeing some of the retail numbers come out. Macy's came out with some numbers last week, and they were light on revenue. They were better on earnings, and they moved the stock up on that. And I would say, though, I would watch that. There were some concerning numbers on a lot of things. Target, as we mentioned, had gone up, but that was against the grain of where there was a lot of anticipation built up that there'd be a real, just a terrible, terrible number. But when we look at Macy's as an example, this is really one of the classics, one of the, you know, not only brick and mortar, but also online. And the company was pretty light on revenue. They have been talking about closing stores and laying off employees and obviously doing what they can. And there's also been a lot of discussion over the weekend about the amount of rebates and the pricing drops that have been taking place to do what they can to bring in the incremental buyer and shopper because they're just not buying right now. So we are seeing that wage growth is, you know, not really moving that much. But, you know, you have to watch now with the fact that, well, unemployment is in better shape. Yet at the same time, we are seeing that we had some of the unemployment benefits that were being paid to people expire. And obviously, that's a big issue. And the fact of the matter is that we do see weather-related issues that is a concern and have been a concern and will be a concern. The one thing that I would pay attention to, I think, right now is the restaurants. You know, the restaurant chains. You know, by the way, there's something about that I was thinking about. You know, when I was in New York this weekend, I looked around and I saw all these chains. I saw, you know, whether it was Panera Chili's or some new ones that I hadn't seen before in terms of popping up. And I got really a bit depressed. You know, what happened to the mom and pop or the individual proprietor that would make just fantastic food at maybe one, two, or three locations, maybe? You know, we've just all been trained to simply eat the food that is now mass-produced for us, isn't it? It's kind of a shame. And we know why. Really, you can't fight the fact that when you look at a Chipotle or you look at a McDonald's or you look at any of these other players out there, they know how to buy. They know how to price. They know how to make sure that they order the right amount and they, in fact, can really manage their inventory in a way that can't be done by the mom and pops. This is really both a good thing for business, a terrible thing for the palate, but a good thing for business. And I think that you have to find some of those. I mean, Chipotle, for example, is a wonderful company that has just done a tremendous job at somewhat pleasing the palate, but also managing their overall cost and their pricing to really please as many people as they can, but also to really control and grow their profitability over time. And I think this is really a big part of what's going on with this business. I would look for some of the chains, though, that have not been doing well. What you're probably going to end up seeing is a lot of news blips about possibly some strategic alternatives because some of them, like a Darden or possibly, who else would it be possibly we'd see here? I think Darden's probably one of the ones. I mean, I would sense that we would look at a Panera. It did have a much, I thought the numbers were terrible, by the way, but the market seemed to like whatever they were seeing. But Panera did do one good thing that I did see in history, which was they were able to capitalize. This is really fascinating. They were able to capitalize on the misery of the retail chains and the establishments that were really hurting back when retail really was getting crushed back in 2007, 2008, et cetera. And what they did was they bought some of the leases at really rock-bottom prices, opened up stores. Therefore, if you think about it, if they did so and they did it on an extended basis long-term, what was really nice is that they are able to really have very good control of their profitability because their overall cost of their establishments and their overhead is really low compared to possibly others that may be just starting up or moving in. And they were able to do so at a time when there was blood in the street. So, you know, hey, bravo for them. Great stuff. I still think that it's not my favorite company in the world in terms of long-term and longevity of being able to maintain competition among some of the others. But we shall see about that. And finally, I just want to wrap up with a discussion about gold for a second. There was a great story that came out this weekend, and it talked about the recent awareness that there could be some shenanigans in the gold fixings in London. You know that gold trades both obviously throughout the day in the pits and also on the electronics, but there's a fixing. There's a London gold fixing that occurs, and there's been some interesting research into the pricing movement and the fluctuations during these meetings that are called the London Global gold fixings, and this happens on a regular basis every day in the morning and the afternoon, the morning fix, the afternoon fix, And it used to be the major play in terms of what was the price of gold. And you have four or five different players that get on the phone. They talk about what the price is, and they do some trading throughout. And the actual meeting may take, could take 5 minutes. It could take an hour or so. And what would happen was the indication of interest throughout the day, and at that point, what would be the amount of gold that may be bought at what price, et cetera. Well, now they're looking into possibly some kind of underhanded work that was done as this was occurring, and maybe that there was a question as to the actual fixing price and if it was really fairly done. Now, of course, this comes in the wake of the LIBOR scandal, which we really haven't seen the end of, because you do know that the global Forex market obviously is still an unregulated and the largest market of all markets. And you're seeing that things like Bitcoin, which is interesting that the Mt. Gox, which is GOX, which is the one that's filing for bankruptcy right now, because supposedly 850, I guess, million, some large number of Bitcoins disappeared somehow. They didn't have the right amount of protection on some of their security for their wallets, et cetera, and they were just disappearing. What's really fascinating is they're one of the ones that weren't in this one consortium of Bitcoins, but you take that for what it's worth, and we'll find out more about that shortly. But it's, I think, between the LIBOR scandal, the Forex markets, and now we're seeing gold, and you'll eventually see the futures market. The same thing is going to happen. You'll note that there's going to be those players that had the money, did what they could to manipulate the markets. There's no question about that, that the futures market is very, very easily manipulated, whether it's the markets of, let's call it, the equity markets, you know, futures of equity markets or possibly bonds, or even, for that matter, you know, when you look at the grains and foodstuffs. So this is not something that's going to go away. It's not something that's going to change, by the way. But unfortunately, the markets are skewed towards those that have the money. Now, one of the things that is a lesson that we just take away from that, and we could say one or two things, oh, my God, I'm not getting involved. This is horrible. How can I be involved in a rigged market, et cetera? Well, or on the other side, you can say, you know what, I'll play along with it, which is a little bit hard to do if you do have, quote unquote, knowledge and understand things, but yet it is the right thing to do. When it comes to equities, if there is a play that, whether it's, by the way, whether it's manipulated or rigged or not, and an equity is moving in one direction, whether or not you believe or I believe or anybody believes that this is the right number and the right movement, the fact is, and my friend Brian Shannon would say, it's, you know, the price is the price, and, you know, price is always right and markets are always right. And what you have is the fact that if a price is moving in a certain direction, that is the right move. And it may not be the right move forever, but when the price trend or direction changes, then it's the right move for then. Think about that. That if we think that the market is, quote unquote, always right, if the consensus is always right, then when you hear there are people out there saying, hey, this analyst got it wrong, or you would say something like, you know, the market's got it wrong, more importantly, you kind of have to throw that out. You've heard that a lot when it comes to some of the recent moves on a stock when it comes to earnings. You know, oh, the market's got it wrong. Well, they got it right for the period they got it right. Let's see what happens moving forward. So consider the fact that when you are investing, you want to obviously take the side of the trend, whether it's short-term, long-term that you're looking at, intraday or multiple day and swing trading. Look at that, and this falls outside of any other discussion, but generally speaking, you want to have, don't fight the tape, don't fight the trend, don't fight the Fed concept in there. For the bigger picture, short-term, you could, you know, obviously maneuver around that. But that's something that I think is a hard lesson to learn and something that you need to consider. Just a little commentary on that. Otherwise, we will be here next week with a guest. This week, we had a scheduled guest and did not work out. I think we had the flu that struck our guest this week, but we will have some more in line for you next week. Any questions, of course, just send to me at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And, of course, check out, we're going to be on Tuesdays at 11 o'clock, every other Tuesday, as I mentioned, over at TradeStation, doing the daily Tuesday market update / ETF update at 11 a.m. And you can easily get a reservation there. It is for free, and I do encourage you to check that out. We move very quickly through that, give some good ideas, and actually revisit those ideas the following week and come up with some other trend ideas, etc. So otherwise, I will see you then. Make sure to do yourself a favor and check out thedisciplinedinvestor.com and all it has to offer for you. as well as triggercharts.com, and your 14-day free trial available at triggerpointresearch.com, where we give you, through email and text messaging alerts, a high level of stocks, either to go long or short, depending on the signal. You may get one every week. You may get five a day. So check that out. You get a 14-day free trial, which is pretty cool. Thanks so much for joining me, and I'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.